Think about your living space. How big is it? I don't mean the square footage of your home or apartment. Rather, I'm thinking about the space where you do most of your living. How small of an area would you need in which to perform your essential daily functions? Members of a growing community of tiny home dwellers are taking things to the next smallest level. I'm Trevor Harris, and next on Thinking Out Loud, we visit with Alexis Stevens, a resident of a tiny home who's traveling the country making a film about the experiences of tiny home residents. I've also got with me Steve Etson. He's organizing the 2016 Como Tiny Home Fest to be held June 25th and 26th at the Activities and Recreation Center, or the ARC, here in Columbia. What is a tiny home?
Great question. Tiny houses have, in my book, have a fairly broad definition. Some people are very specific about it. But a modern tiny house is defined as a home under 400 square feet, oftentimes built on a trailer. But in my broader sense, I think a tiny home can be any kind of structure, small in size, that I consider under 400 square feet. It could be on foundation. It could be built with alternative building materials like straw bale or super adobe or whatnot. And the reason why I broaden that definition is because tiny or very small dwellings have been around since the dawn of time. More recently in American history, early pioneer homes in the frontier, where I am currently in Southern Colorado, were very small cabins. And then oftentimes those were 300 square feet or less. Of course, being a resident of a tiny house on wheels, I love my home and I love the flexibility, but I think the beautiful thing about the tiny house, modern tiny house movement, is this idea that you can create a dwelling that fits your needs and your desires.
And Alexis and her partner Christian Parsons are so confident that there's a community of people already living in tiny houses that she's set out across the country to document that. Alexis, what are you finding?
We're finding that there are thousands of people who want to live in tiny houses. The majority of those people we talk to want to live around other people. And so that has brought across the development of many different kinds of tiny house communities. And all of these communities, if you will, are intentional communities. And when I say intentional, for some people, it brings them to a very specific image of like an eco-village or something. And that is out there for sure. But it's much broader than that. And from rural America to suburban and even urban settings, you're finding different kinds of tiny house communities. Now, of course, major barriers for people are purchase of land and regulations. But this idea of living around other people is because if you're going to be living intentionally small or tiny, you're going to be spending a lot more time outside, which is, for me, one of the beauties of living in a tiny home is you get greater connection with your surroundings, which could be nature or your neighbors. And then we have this opportunity to share resources and to build stronger relationships. And so a lot of folks that we talk to in our travels, and we've been traveling for 14,000 miles over the last year across the country, a lot of people really want to live around other people. Sometimes, and fairly frequently, that means in the backyard of a larger home, which is a kind of community in itself, which is having a relationship oftentimes with the person in the big house. And so it's an intentional way of life, because we're living intentionally small and people are seeking a more meaningful way of life. And the other tiny house communities that's forming in stronger numbers is a tiny house village directed at folks who were formerly homeless or struggling with chronic homelessness. And these tiny house villages in my book are, the way I look at them is they're an intentional use of a tiny home to create a more meaningful, higher quality of life for that individual. So that's the through line I find with tiny house villages for homeless and for folks who otherwise are not in that situation. For me, it's important to point that out because some folks are not particularly keen on the idea of tiny houses being used for homeless, but it's a model out there that's been thriving. A couple of my favorite examples are Opportunity Village Eugene, Oregon, or where we just recently visited Community First in Austin, which is this incredible tiny house village mixture of tiny homes on foundation, RVs, canvas-sided cottages, and it's landscaped to the T, and there's gardens and job opportunities. And I'll tell you what, as a tiny house resident, I really wanted just to live there personally, but it's just for folks who are formerly homeless and they are forging a new permanent home.
As increasing numbers of Americans choose tiny homes, what do local leaders think of the idea? Back in 2014, here in Columbia, our city council adopted a revision to the Code of Ordinances that would specifically allow for the construction of accessory dwelling units, or ADUs. Sometimes these might be called mother-in-law houses. Such structures are different from tiny homes in that ADUs are built and fixed on a foundation, whereas a tiny home often rests on a trailer and, by its nature, is mobile. I recently explored the issues around tiny homes and ADUs with City of Columbia Senior Planner Steve McIntyre. Describe from a planner's perspective, what are ADUs or accessory dwelling units?
Well, accessory dwelling units are designed to be subsidiary or secondary dwellings that would be smaller than a typical single-family home and intended to be positioned usually either behind a principal dwelling or sometimes within it, in the case of a basement suite. The ordinance that was approved in 2014 actually requires that the accessory dwelling unit, if proposed, be no greater than 800 square feet in floor area, or it cannot be greater than 75% in floor area of the principal dwelling unit. So that's the general parameters for it.
And as you're describing that, I'm thinking that's a mother-in-law house, historically.
Absolutely, yeah. Historically, there are many names for accessory dwelling units, carriage houses, mother-in-law suites. Often they're situated, I think a lot of people imagine them situated above a garage, a detached garage in the backyard. And certainly in our central city neighborhoods, we have a lot of long, narrow lots that would be well suited to situating a mother-in-law suite or an ADU in the rear yard somewhere, have a lot of excess space in the back to accommodate them.
So when the ordinance was passed and the code was changed, what was the thinking? Why does the city want to encourage accessory dwelling units?
Well, one of the things that came out of the comprehensive plan is a desire for housing options. We want to see some variety in housing types. We also want to encourage options that may present opportunities for affordable housing and also opportunities for individuals who might want to live in a separate detached home. So one-bedroom options are there's a big shortage of that in the city. Another benefit or potential benefit associated with accessory dwelling units is the opportunity for affordable housing that they present, and basically the fact that they're smaller doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be affordable, but there's a greater likelihood that these would be affordable units.
And they wouldn't necessarily be owned. They would probably be rented by the owner of the principal dwelling or somebody who lives off-site.
That's right. That raises another benefit potential for ADUs to be used as type of unit that perhaps as a family moves through its life cycle, perhaps you have children, they leave home, and then you want to stay on site, but you don't really need all of the space of the principal single-family home. You could maybe move into the smaller accessory dwelling unit on the same property and rent out the principal dwelling.
What I thought you were going to say is a family, as it goes through its life cycle, has aging parents that need care but don't need to go into a nursing home and can live on site.
And that's actually a perfect opportunity there as well. I mean, ADUs provide an option for all kinds of different scenarios. And certainly aging in place is the catchphrase that represents what you were alluding to. I mean, suburban sprawl or urban sprawl is a big problem. Anytime we have a new subdivision on the outer edge of town, we're looking at the loss of agricultural land or natural areas, in addition to the extension of public infrastructure, which may initially be paid for by developers, but from that point forward is maintained on by the city at the taxpayer's expense. So we do have to be thinking about this these issues as well, and there is certainly a value added in infill development, including accessory dwelling units and other types of opportunities to increase the housing density in the central city area. We're very interested in creating more walkable neighborhoods, and one of the big problems we have currently encounter is lack of houses or of patrons and residents to support basic commercial amenities or other things that you might want to have in your neighborhood. Everyone loves the idea of a corner store within walking distance, but not many people, I think, realize how much density, how many people it would take to support a store like that. So yeah, we're always looking for interesting opportunities to increase density without having negative impacts on existing neighborhoods. And we'll certainly try to support those opportunities and accommodate them as we move forward.
That was City of Columbia Senior Planner Steve McIntyre discussing the benefits of building in density by placing small houses in the backyards of existing homes throughout central City Columbia neighborhoods. A major difference between accessory dwelling units that McIntyre discussed in tiny homes is that while ADUs, accessory dwelling units, are fixed in place, tiny homes are on trailers. Again, here's tiny home resident and filmmaker Alexis Stevens.
Originally, the trailer was to get around building code and to work within some existing zoning or to fly under the radar. A funny thing has happened is that for some people who that was the case, you know, avenues are opening up for tiny house on foundation, but there's this other camp of people who have embraced the mobility as a kind of flexibility that matches our time, which is we live in a time where there's less job security. We also live in a time where housing costs are extremely high. And so to be able to, if you lose a job or if a family member falls ill, to have the flexibility to move with your home is huge. Now, of course, that could lead to some other parking issues down the road, but this is a fascinating thing that people are moving toward. The other part about that is there are a group of folks who are digital nomads, who are non-location-dependent workers who are embracing travel as part of their regular way of living. Now, those folks who are doing it regularly, like myself, are in very few numbers. Most tiny house people only move their house a few times.
You just heard from tiny home resident and filmmaker Alexis Stevens discussing why she and others choose tiny homes. She and her husband are making a movie about their experience dwelling in super small homes. Want to see the latest in super small residences? The 2016 Como Tiny Home Fest features numerous tiny home models and builders. The event happens June 25th and 26th at the ARC here in Columbia. More details and required registration for the free event is at tinyhomefest.org. Thanks to my guests on this evening's program, Matthew Hernando, Steve McIntyre, Steve Edson, and Alexis Stevens. You can listen to past episodes of Thinking Out Loud on our website, kbia.org. Click on Programs, and that's where you'll find Thinking Out Loud. For the show's executive producer, Darren Helwidge, I'm Trevor Harris, thanking you for listening to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA.